From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Afghan capital, Kabul, was the site of a massive deadly bombing of a wedding this past weekend that killed 63 people. What was supposed to have been a joyful occasion turned into a nightmare, with the Islamic State taking credit for the brutal attack. While the bride and groom were spared, many of their family members were not. More than 180 people were injured. At the same time, more than 90 people were injured from 10 coordinated bombs in the eastern Afghan province of Nangarhar. The attacks came at the same time as the US is in yet another round of talks with the Taliban over the conditions for some US troops to withdraw. The war in Afghanistan is the longest official war in the U.S.'s history. Under President Trump, that war has not waned, and civilian casualties at the hands of the U.S. and its allies have increased. In late July, Trump casually remarked to the leader of Pakistan that he could end the Afghan war, quote, in a week, and that he could have Afghanistan, quote, wiped off the face of the earth, but did not want to kill 10 million people. My guest is Marjorie Cohn, a professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She's also a writer for Truth Out, and she recently wrote the piece, Candidates Must Commit to Immediate U.S. Withdrawal from Afghanistan. Welcome to the program, Marjorie.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So even though the horrific bombing in Kabul that took place this past weekend, killing 63 people, was an attack that the Islamic State took credit for, isn't it true that over this past year, it's actually been the U.S. and forces backed by the U.S. that have killed more civilians in Afghanistan?
That's true. Yes, there has been killing on all sides, but the first 6 months of this year, according to the United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, during that period of time, the majority of civilian deaths were caused by the United States and the Taliban government, but mostly the United States aerial operations.
So when we have a situation where you have so much killing happening and the United States is preparing to withdraw some, not all of its troops, it seems to me strange that we're not really hearing much about the war in Afghanistan in the US media. Do you get the sense that Trump just wants out of this war as much out of this war as is possible?
I think Trump would like to make a successful deal. You know, he's a deal maker. He has not yet succeeded in making a successful deal with North Korea or getting Iran to come to the table. So a deal in the Afghan war would be a big thing for him. Now, the United States has 14,000 troops in Afghanistan. 8,400 of them were inherited from the Obama administration. And there have been 8 rounds of talks between the U.S. government and the Taliban about ending the conflict there and ending U.S. involvement. Now, the Taliban wants complete U.S. withdrawal of all troops before any ceasefire. The United States would like to leave about 7,000 troops in Afghanistan for many years, including special operations forces. So the two sticking points are, number one, the withdrawal of all U.S. troops, or whatever schedule they come up with for withdrawal of U.S. troops, and the other is the Taliban agreeing to prevent terrorist, so-called terrorist attacks against U.S. forces. And this would be from Al-Qaeda and ISIS. The conventional wisdom and David Petraeus, who was the leading U.S. general in Afghanistan during the Obama administration, wrote a recent op-ed in the Wall Street Journal saying, oh no, we can't pull out because then, terrorist attacks would happen against the United States. The Taliban would not protect against that. But if you look at the interests of the Taliban are not in bed with Al-Qaeda. They had an agreement with Osama bin Laden, which he violated, and the September 11th attacks have done nothing but destabilize the Taliban, and they are not fond of al-Qaeda. And Taliban has been fighting ISIS on the ground. So I don't think it's likely at all. In fact, I think it's extremely unlikely that the Taliban would provide a safe haven for al-Qaeda, given the fact that al-Qaeda has a fairly safe haven already in Pakistan. Why would they come back into Afghanistan? Mm-hmm. So we have 8 rounds of talks with no agreement. They are trying to set the table for direct talks between the U.S. government and the Taliban, but that has not happened yet. That said, I think that Trump would love to say, oh, look, I made a deal with the Taliban and I'm withdrawing troops from Afghanistan as the election gets closer.
If the United States didn't want its troops to be attacked by al-Qaeda or ISIS, withdrawal of those troops would seem to be the best way to ensure no attacks.
Absolutely. It's kind of a no-brainer, but, you know, military people like to keep troops around. They like to fight. That's what they do. And Trump doesn't know his backside from his elbows about much, particularly military matters, but other things as well. And so he is probably deferring to the generals who are saying, oh, no, we can't take all the troops out yet. So I just don't see the prospects for a successful so-called deal between the U.S. government and the Taliban in the near future.
Now, we've been seeing so much in the news over and over again of the U.S. and the Taliban and their proxies nearing a deal. And as you said, there've been 8 rounds of talks. Just earlier this week, there was yet another report saying that they may be near a deal and what's that going to mean? But you're suggesting that they're still nowhere near a deal. It's just, you know, why are they almost always near a deal but never actually getting to one?
Well, these 8 rounds of talks supposedly were to determine when and under what conditions there would be a face-to-face meeting between the U.S. government and the Taliban. And they have not come up with that preliminary agreement yet, in spite of these 8 rounds of talks. They are scheduled to continue. The two sides seem to be quite far apart on the issue of how many troops and how fast the U.S. would have to withdraw from Afghanistan, because, as I said, the Taliban are not going to agree to a ceasefire. That's what they've said, unless and until the U.S. removes all of its troops, and the U.S. doesn't want to do that.
Now, you point out in your article in Truthout an issue that just doesn't get much attention, which is looking back on the U.S. military's conduct in Afghanistan over this past, now, nearly 2 decades. It's the longest official war the U.S. has ever waged. And you pointed out that the International Criminal Court, the ICC, is considering that all of those involved in the Afghan war, including U.S. troops, should be investigated for war crimes. Tell me a little bit about that.
The prosecutor, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Fatou Bensouda, has mounted what's called a preliminary examination of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Afghanistan committed by all parties, including U.S. military and CIA forces. And she concluded there was a reasonable basis to believe that U.S. forces had committed war crimes and crimes against humanity, particularly from 2005 to 2015, but it's even broader than that. That's when most of these allegations took place. And these war crimes include torture, cruel treatment, rape, sexual assault, and as part of a policy by the United States. In other words, not isolated bad actors, but part of U.S. policy. So the chief prosecutor of the ICC, recommended to the pretrial chamber that it open what is called a formal investigation into these war crimes and crimes against humanity. And they said, well, yes, we found there is a reasonable basis. This is the pretrial chamber of the ICC, of the court. We found a reasonable basis to believe that U.S. forces did commit war crimes and crimes against humanity. However, we are not going to open a formal investigation because it would not serve the interests of justice, at whatever that means, and that has not really been defined by the court. Now, the pretrial chamber did say that it would not necessarily be feasible to open an investigation because there were so many incidents over such a long period of time, and they really doubted that the relevant parties would cooperate. And, of course, one of those relevant parties is the United States. Now, coincidentally, do you think a week before the pretrial chamber, in an unprecedented decision not to open an investigation when they find a reasonable basis to believe these high crimes, these atrocities have been committed, 1 week before that, the U.S. government withdrew Fatou Bensouda, the prosecutor, ICC prosecutor's visa to come to the United States. And Secretary of State Pompeo said, well, if the ICC doesn't change what it's doing, we're going to impose economic sanctions on the court, punish them even more. And what the U.S. government pointed to was Bensouda's advocacy to the court that it open a formal investigation. So really what you have here, Sonali, is blackmail by the U.S. government, blackmailing the court, saying we're going to punish you in all of these very serious ways if you investigate U.S. leaders for war crimes and crimes against humanity, which leads, of course, to impunity for the worst crimes in the world.
So this war has gone on for so many years. It's sucked up so many resources, cost so many lives, Afghan lives primarily, but also some U.S. lives. And it's not something that has come up so far in the two major Democratic candidate debates. And I'm wondering, your piece was titled In Truth Out, Candidates Must Commit to Immediate U.S. Withdrawal from Afghanistan. Have any of the top Democratic candidates in the very crowded field actually committed to a complete U.S. withdrawal of troops?
Well, there are only two candidates who have guaranteed that all U.S. troops would be out of Afghanistan by the end of their first year in office, and that's Tulsi Gabbard and Pete Buttigieg. Now, the other candidates were asked whether U.S. troops would be out of Afghanistan, all U.S. troops would be out of Afghanistan after their first term in office. And Elizabeth Warren said no. Bernie Sanders said, I suspect not. Beto O'Rourke said, we have to begin to bring these wars to a close. Kirsten Gillibrand said, I believe that we need to bring our troops home from Afghanistan, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia. Cory Booker said, we cannot have forever wars in this nation. Julian Castro said, we need to withdraw in a way that is orderly, respects our allies. Amy Klobuchar said, we have been there longer than some of our young people have been on this earth. Hmm. Andrew Yang said, it's impossible to know for sure, given the reality on the ground. Maybe we'll need more people there. Marianne Williamson said, first I would talk to the Afghan women before I withdrew any troops. And Kamala Harris said, we need to have a presence there in terms of supporting what the leaders of Afghanistan want to do. In other words, Kamala Harris would defer to the Afghans to determine when the U.S. pulls out its troops. Bernie Sanders said that the American people don't want endless war, and said that Congress must reassert its war-making authority, and which it has pretty much relinquished since 9/11, with not enacting a new authorization for the use of military force, or withdrawing the old ones that are still being used to rationalize all of these wars that Obama and Bush, Obama and now Trump are involved in. Joe Biden said, we want to end the forever wars in Afghanistan and the Middle East. But only Gabbard and Buttigieg have said they would withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan by the end of their first year in office.
So they said it sort of explicitly and confidently, whereas even though Sanders has said that he doesn't want endless war, he answered that he suspects that there wouldn't be U.S. troops in Afghanistan by the end of his first term. And it surprises me that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who are the two progressive candidates among the four front runners, wouldn't take a stronger stand, especially given that economic justice is such an important issue for them. And it is so easy to connect war spending, especially in a war that has really done nothing constructive, with their economic justice agenda.
Yes, well, I know what you're saying. And on this particular issue, as I said, Gabbard and Buttigieg are the strongest, but next in line are Sanders and Warren, or Warren and Sanders, I guess you would say. So that's what they're saying. But we're not just talking about Afghanistan, really. I mean, I think that a central pillar of all of the campaigns of all of the Democrats should be not just withdrawing all U.S. troops from Afghanistan, but also from all of these wars in which the United States is embroiled. And also, I would go on to say, and reassessing aid, for example, the billions of dollars that the United States gives to Israel every year, more than any other country, while Israel maintains a punishing occupation, an illegal occupation against the Palestinians. This is in the news now with Rashida Tlaib's invitation, withdrawal of invitation, re-invitation to go on a congressional delegation to Israel, and she was going to visit her grandmother in the West Bank. And when you have the reports are that Trump told Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, that he should not allow Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar to another Muslim, but not a Palestinian Rashida Tlaib to go to Israel. And so Netanyahu, of course, has been in bed with Trump all along, said they were not welcome there. And then there was a big outcry. And then he said, okay, she can come. Tlaib could come. And Tlaib said, I'm not going to come if I have to agree to keep my mouth shut about the evils of the occupation. My grandmother would not be proud of that. But then Bernie Sanders said, well, then we should withdraw our military aid, our aid that we give to Israel. So he's strong on that. I think perhaps Bernie Sanders is the strongest of the candidates on ending the occupation and being mindful of the rights of the Palestinians being trampled for many, many years by Israel. So I think there is a difference there. But I would say that a central pillar of these campaigns should not just be to withdraw all our troops from all of these conflicts, but also our military bases. We have some 800 military bases all over the world, and the aid that we provide to countries like Israel and Egypt.
And also, would you want the candidates to promise to comply with any investigations by the ICC on war crimes in Afghanistan?
Absolutely. And that should be one of their pledges as well, that we will cooperate with the ICC, which is a neutral body with judges from all over the world. And 50 years in the making, the United States participated in developing the court. And then then as he was leaving office, Bill Clinton signed the treaty for the International Criminal Court, but said, didn't recommend to Bush that he send that treaty to the Senate for advice and consent to ratification. Signing means that you intend to ratify. You're not supposed to take action inconsistent with the object and purpose of the treaty. Ratifying a treaty means you become a party and you're bound by all of the obligations in the treaty. So not only didn't George W. Bush send the treaty to the Senate for advice and consent to ratification, he removed the signature of the U.S. from the treaty. It's unprecedented. And guess who did it? John Bolton. He said it was the proudest moment of his life. And so now you have the United States is not a party to the ICC. Israel isn't either, by the way. But U.S. leaders could become defendants in war crimes prosecutions if they were in countries that are parties to the treaty. So what the Trump administration is doing now is basically blackmailing the court, the IC, saying if you investigate, and they didn't just say investigate U.S. leaders, they also said Israeli leaders and leaders of other allies for war crimes, then we are going to punish you. So a central tenet of these presidential campaigns, these platforms, should be cooperation with war crimes investigations in the International Criminal Court.
And one might argue that a truly progressive position would also demand reparations for the damage that the U.S. has done in countries like Afghanistan. I mean, you mentioned the Marianne Williamson was interested in the well-being of Afghan women. Afghan women were not helped by the U.S. They are going to be left in the lurch. The U.S. is coordinating and dealing with corrupt Afghan government officials who are misogynist, and the Taliban, which may want peace, but is also misogynist. You know, if the U.S. government truly cared about Afghan women, there's a way to do it without relying on war, because war has only hurt them.
Absolutely. I mean, there are plenty of things and resources that the U.S. could bring to bear to help Afghan women, and indeed, Afghans in general, to pick up the pieces of this devastation that was created, that has been going on for the last 18 years. Tens of thousands of Afghans have died. 3,500 Americans have died, and many, many more people wounded. And quite frankly, Sonali, nobody talks about this, but the U.S. had no business in the first place to go into Afghanistan. The Afghan government did not attack us on 9/11. The hijackers mostly came from Saudi Arabia. And yet, in an act of retribution, which is illegal under international law, George W. Bush invaded Afghanistan and changed its regime. And we've been fighting there ever since. Billions of dollars, of U.S. dollars that could have gone to healthcare and education and infrastructure and helping people who really need it in this country, have gone to kill and maim and torture people in Afghanistan, women, children, and this is just, it never should have happened, and it should end immediately, and it's really incumbent upon all of these presidential candidates to commit to that.
I'm so glad you brought up that issue. That's a great note to end on. Marjorie, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She's a writer for Truth Out as well, and she recently wrote the piece, Candidates Must Commit to Immediate U.S. Withdrawal from Afghanistan. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.